Fresh Takes.
Fresh Takes. Get your Fresh Takes here on the Don't Involve Me podcast. And speaking of Fresh Takes, I got a fresh hot take for you. Agatha All Along is shaping up to be the greatest MCU show, if not an argument for contender of the greatest live-action Marvel show yet. Yes, I am serious. It is that great. Speaking of which, the Penguin is in contention for the best live-action DC comic book show. Yeah, that's right. That's what we're talking about today. Agatha All Along, a little bit of Penguin. That's it. All right, let's get into it. Cue the music. Hello, and welcome to Don't Evolve Me, the place like Ash Ketchum's Pikachu, we don't evolve, we just level up. Hello, we're talking Agatha All Along, episode 6, episode 7. I briefly talked about episode 6 last week when we talked Venom. We will also talk Venom and why I haven't even watched the movie yet. We'll get into it, as well as the Penguin. And I'm really, really excited about today's episode, because I've been wanting to talk about the last two episodes of Agatha All Along. And I wanted to talk about it, not because it's kind of like the nerd thing right now, but because it's surprisingly been a really good show. And not just a really good show, a great show. And I'm honestly kind of surprised how great it is. I didn't think at this time, with only the finale coming up, episode 8 and episode 9 on its way next week, I didn't think I would be in this position where I'm considering calling this the greatest MCU show. To be fair, the bar for this isn't that high. The bar for what is the greatest MCU show isn't like a great bar to achieve, right? Now, if we include the Netflix Marvel shows, that'd be a different story. The bar is incredibly high. Daredevil is a 4+, 5- show. Honestly, I think you can safely say it's in the fives. I think there's flaws to it, or I would say it's a 5-. Jessica Jones is a 4, maybe a 4+. The first season, though, is a 5. That is a masterclass of a season. That's arguably the greatest season of television for comic books. But Agatha All Along, as an MCU show, is probably at this point the greatest show. Obviously, we still have 2 episodes left, and obviously the ending is going to be huge. But I just want to open up the podcast to talk about Agatha and the claim that this is the best MCU show. It is shaping up to be. The first 5 episodes I thought were great. I thought they were 4-4 material. But the last 2 episodes... my God, wow. And not just wow, but I really just like that both these episodes are drastically different than the rest of the show. And when I look at each episode, I realize that all these episodes, except for maybe like 3 in the middle, are just different from each other. And obviously with TV, you want very like close similarities. But like I feel like when you have these episode or 8-episode, 6-episode, 9-episode structures where it's kind of just like one movie blend together, like one giant movie. You know, like the old 90s like TV movies we would have, like It or The Shining, the TV movie of it. Like, that's what these television shows from like Marvel kind of felt like, more or less one giant movie, where this show is like, it is one giant movie in a sense where it's like you have the whole same story, but each episode is just vastly different in itself, even though that some of these episodes have similar setup, right? You have a trial. The witches must overcome the trial. And each trial has its own set design and has its own thing going for it. But yet, this last episode, I think it was the third or fourth trial. I think it's trial number four. So different. And like, in its display. And I've only watched it once, and I really should just stop this and watch it a second time to talk about it. But I'm reading through, like, the episode description, and it doesn't sound great. Like, it doesn't sound bad, but it doesn't sound like a great television show. And I'm like, man, it's such a, like, episode 7, Death's Hands in Mine, is a hard one to describe. And honestly, it's a hard one to understand until, like, the very end, until you get it. And once you get it, it's just like, damn. So I just want to open it up because, like, the idea that I think Agatha is shaping up to be the best MCU show. And I was going to save this argument, but we're going into it right away. The two other shows that I say that's in consideration for the greatest Marvel show, greatest MCU show, is WandaVision. I gave that one a 4-. The reason why I gave WandaVision a 4-, I really like the setup of it. It's the same creators of Agatha. I remember I watched it a second time before watching Agatha, and I the show hits still. Each episode is like different. It is going into the TV genre, the comedy, and it's, you know, very much highlighting different comedic styles per episode. And I thought it was just really, really well done. The only reason why I didn't think WandaVision was higher than a 4- is because it didn't really stick the landing. Again, Agatha hasn't stuck the landing yet. That's why I'm saying it's shaping up to be the greatest MCU show. I don't know if it is. And I don't know if it's going to stick the landing. Because if it doesn't stick the landing, I don't know if I can say it's the greatest show. Because there is one particular show that did stick the landing. And actually, the landing is why it's so considered great, which is Loki. 6 episodes. Very much, the first season was very much a long movie. But it ended in a very satisfying place, which is they got to the end of time. And that's where the variant of Kang was there. And Jonathan Majors did a freaking fantastic performance as Kang. And you can say what you want about his like personal life, whether he's guilty or not guilty. If his Kang performance in Ant-Man 3 was good or not. You can argue that, right? But man, his performance as the One Who Remains was magnificent. As well as Loki Season 2. The ending of that show, where it eventually went to the story of Loki and like what he became at the end, was great. So Agatha's in this weird place between WandaVision and Loki now. Because I will say Agatha's setup, its style, how there's some great individual episodes, is in between WandaVision and Loki. Because WandaVision was great setup. Didn't stick the landing. The landing wasn't bad for WandaVision. It just wasn't like satisfying. It was just kind of like, okay. It was interesting, but it wasn't satisfying. The Vision battle between the two of them, that was satisfying. That was a cool end to that fight. Even though the CGI wasn't great. But Agatha, all along, is in this weird place where if they stick the landing, this might be the first time I can say for like significantly, this is a great, great, great TV show. I don't know if it will. there's a lot of plot points, and we'll talk about when we get into it. But yeah, my argument is I think this show is shaping up to be the greatest MCU show, and if it sticks the landing, I think it goes up there with Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Legion, as well as maybe peaks of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't think the longevity of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. makes that a conversation, but I think like there's peaks of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that belong up there. So yeah, that's the start that I'm going to go with. Agatha All Along, arguably the greatest MCU show. We will see. We will get into episode 6 and episode 7. We'll talk a little bit more deep into it. I just want to start off with that rant. Let's get into what I've been nerding out on. The original start to this episode. So what I've been nerding out on is three major things. One, as always, the last year or so is One Piece. We are now at Wano. I believe we're at 960-something. We've watched the story of Goldie Rogers, and I'm not going to spoil it, but they went in back in time to kind of show the journey that Goldie Roger went on, what he found at the last island, like an idea of what he found. And it's interesting because it's like they didn't really show us it, but they showed us the bliss that came, like that they experienced. And I thought it was a very interesting. It was just a very interesting sneak peek. One Piece, Wano arc, the backstory, and then everything up to leading to Luffy's. Yeah, I'm going really into spoilers here. It's just been really good. I've been just enjoying One Piece from the start. The journey is amazing. And I feel like every arc that I kind of get myself hype up for just kind of surpasses it. It's such a good show. And I'll just say it the last hour or this last year that I've been watching it, I've been banging my hand on the table for the show because it's just really, really good. It's great stuff. If you have any interest, just watch it. You have 6 months to catch up. Obviously, it's not enough time if you haven't started any of it. But you know what? The best time to start was probably maybe a couple years ago, maybe a year ago, to catch up to the finale of the show. But the next best time is now. It's a great show. Other things I've been nerding out on, I've been playing a lot of Uncharted 4. I've been wanting to play Last of Us Part 2 because I'm getting really hyped for The Last of Us, like Season 2 to come out, which is going to be at least part of Part 2. Since I don't want to play it beforehand, weirdly enough, people could just say, just play it now and then play it again. And I'm like, I might do that, but the way my motivation works, I can't play things so close together, which is ironic because the last time I played this game was like, well, yeah, I think after Last of Us Part 1. So I guess technically it's been over a year since I played it last. But that is, here's the problem, right? My motivation died. I didn't want anything to do with it. So yeah, I've been playing Uncharted 4 to get my Naughty Dog gaming experience out. And I forget, like, I almost forget why I loved Uncharted in the first place. I loved Uncharted before I loved Last of Us. Actually, Uncharted is the reason why I did play The Last of Us. I wanted to play another Naughty Dog game. That's such a great game company. Between Uncharted and The Last of Us, I know you can say Jack and Dexter, you can say Crash Bandicoot or other great games, but Uncharted Last of Us was like the time that like the company became like for real. Like it was a great elite game company. And I just forget why I love Uncharted 4. Because the gameplay isn't like the thing that sells me on the game. The gameplay is probably the weakest part. And I would even say it's the weakest part of The Last of Us Part 1. But it's the story. It's the characters. Just Nathan Drake talking to his brother or Elena or Sully. Just the conversations. I don't know why. I'm just drawn in. The writing is amazing. So, I am refinding my love for the Uncharted series. Gameplay is meh. Like, it's not bad. It can be fun at times. I think Uncharted 4 tried to do some things that were different from the other three. Trying to add some more stealth. But, man, it's just the story and the characters. Last little bit I've been nerding out on. D&D. Shout out to my DM, Mike. Because I've been doing a weekly campaign since, I think, April now. And yeah, just really enjoyed where my character has been. Is Slom, he's been a monk, deciding I'm going to multi-class into Ranger, which is scary because Ranger is often being told as like one of the worst class, if not the worst class. But the Monk Ranger multi-class, I've been told, is actually surprisingly really good. But the thing I'm excited about, and the reason why I'm calling out my DM, is... as you guys know, huge Pokemon fan. Like, my intro is like Ash Ketchum Pikachu. We don't evolve. We just level up. Like, this is a very Pokemon influenced show. And the DM threw out a bag of tricks to give me. And if a bag of tricks for you guys is just like you throw out a random thing, and a random beast comes out. And he made a system that is very Pokemon-like, where I can have six animals out at once. And if they die, they're gone for the day, but I come back and I can throw out six. And it's such a cool concept. Because, like, the bag of tricks that I had, there was a hag who owns a company. And she wanted her bag back, and she cursed us until she got the bag back. But we ended up making a deal where we get to keep the bag. And my character was, like, attached to the bag. Very much would, like, fight to the death over it for reasons I will not get into, because that's a whole episode itself. But he made a deal, and the witch was like, I'll improve the bag. All my animals got demonized. Which is just a cool concept, because like now we have to reimagine like the animals as like demonized, and like thanks to AI, like that's very much possible. So the concept is just really dope that all these animals are just like demonized, like stronger demonized versions of it. But also, the DM added a whole slot of eight characters if you throw the balls in water, and our campaign is very water based. We are, all four of us are all like amphibians. Like we can go in water, out of water. And our fifth one's a robot who's made to be in depth in water. So like my character, who's been using animals to like for combat reasons, Monk Ranger, had use for land, you know, water animals. So it's just really like a really cool concept of like, throw it out, you get new demonized, like, I think the first animal I throw out was, like, a demonized shark. And I'm just in love with, like, the idea. And I'm really excited for our next campaign, which is going to be in 2 weeks, because we're doing another game. And I just want to shout out to Mike, because, like, been really into, like, the idea of, like, the D&D campaign, and, like, the idea of, like, playing Pokemon within the campaign. It's just really cool, and I'm super excited for it. The other little bit is, I'm starting my adventures as a DM myself. For you guys who don't know, who haven't like listened to every single episode of my podcast, I have took my hand in like writing. I have a comic book series where I make 8 pages. I left it on a cliffhanger. I have no idea how to like write it, and it's been a challenge getting into it, where it's been like 5 years since I tried finishing that issue. The idea of, like, DMing a game, because I'm always constantly coming up with ideas, different things that you can do. And I finally made the commitment that, hey, I'm going to do a session. I'm going to do a one-shot. Of course, I think everything in grand, so it's not just a one-shot. It's like a start to possibly a long campaign. We will see if that happens. I'm more or less trying to figure out a way to, like, make it short. But yeah, I'm just nerding out on the idea of like structuring a story for the players. We have quite a few newer players, so I'm excited for it. So that's what I've been nerding out on. Let's get into the news. And then we're going to dive deeper into Agatha and a little bit of Penguin. So let's get into it.
It's time for a news quickie. Oh, yeah.
Ah, little bit of news. Agatha all along, in a surprising fashion, is getting good views. And I know, it's not that big of a news. Probably could have added to the whole Agatha segment. There's not a whole lot of news this week. But I'm just going to say, Agatha is hitting its numbers. And it's actually kind of surprising. Not surprising in the sense that, like, it's a really good show. And it deserves to get these numbers. But this show had such a, like, a negative, no one wants this, no one wants to see it, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's a show about women. And, of course, comic book fans, there's a dark side of it where people aren't interested. So it's really cool to see that Agatha's hitting its numbers and it's having success. Because it is just a really good show. But it, like, just because something's a really good show, it doesn't always reflect in the numbers. So it's really cool that it's happening. Matt Reeves and HBO, with the success of The Penguin, are talking about other spin-off shows for the Matt Reeves, the Batman trilogy. And I don't know how I feel about this, because I really do enjoy, I'm enjoying The Penguin. But the idea of making spin-off shows from a Batman universe isn't fresh. And there's, like, cool stories to be told here, right? If you got, like, a Mr. Freeze show or, like, an Arkham show, like, there could be some really cool concepts. I'm enjoying The Penguin. But, man, there is, like, one issue that I have with the last episode of Penguin. Or, I guess, two episodes of Penguin when this episode releases. And, like, debating if I want to just say it now. We'll save it. But, yes, I do have a take on the idea of getting more Batman spinoffs. We'll talk about it. Last little bit of news. James Gunn has been talking about a show, and it seems like he always has a quote every single week. He's confirming that DCU, his movies, every single one of his movies is going to have a different unique tone. Unlike Marvel, where Marvel has very similar tones. And I would argue that Marvel is not as similar to people think, but like the Marvel jokes and the Marvel comedic aspect to it is like in every single of its movies, where tone wise it does seem like every movie's the same, so I understand it. But James Gunn is confirming that his movies are all going to have unique tones, and I think this is, I didn't really think this is news per se, because I always kind of figured this was going to be the case for DC, but I'm happy he's saying it. I'm happy he's like, yeah, Superman's going to have its tone. Creatures Commandos is going to have its tone. Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow is going to have its own tone. And I'm happy that Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow is going to have a different tone than like Superman Legacy. Because Supergirl is like a very specific tone that they're going for in that story. At least the story that it's the origin story. Not the origin story. The comic that it's from has a certain tone to it. Such a great comic. I suggest you guys reading it. But I'm happy that he's just clarifying, like, yeah, they're all going to have their own tone. It's not going to be like Marvel, where it's like, it all seems very similar. All right, that's a little bit of the news. Let's get into some rumors. Rumor mill. The thing, the segment that I don't have any sound production for. I should just, yeah. I need to get on that. All right, let's get into it. Doctor Doom is rumored to have 15 to 20 minutes of screen time in Fantastic Four First Steps. Wonderful. I don't know if it's true. We don't know if it's true. I hope it's the case, because I think Doctor Doom is a huge character for Fantastic Four, and I like the idea of him having 20 minutes in that movie to kind of set up his character rather than just a cameo or an after the credits. Because I think it's hard to build a character. It's really hard to build a character that's going to be basically the main character in a big team-up film without more than... Like, it's hard to do it just off cameos, right? Of course, Thanos kind of did that, right? He had the cameo at the end of Age of... Or after Avengers, he has the cameo at Age of Ultron, and then he has the 5-10 minute appearance in Guardians of the Galaxy. So, of course, that was kind of like his setup. But I also feel like that works because you had three phases of movies that kind of led up to that moment. You didn't really need much more. Whereas Phase 4, Phase 5 of the MCU has been so scattered that there really isn't been a setup for a Doom. Now, if this is Kang or King Light, maybe. But I like the idea that Doom is going to get some screen time in Fantastic Four, and we're going to get those Mr. Reed Richards, Dr. Doom. Maybe we have some screen time between the rivalry of those two. And I just want to see it. All right, more MCU news. This is mostly MCU rumor mills. Four projects are coming in 2026. That's the rumor. One of them being Doomsday, the other one being Spider-Man 4. And there's two official untitled ones. One before Doomsday and one after Doomsday. Spider-Man being after Doomsday. The one before and the one after, there's the two biggest contenders. One, Doctor Strange is one of them. I think we all know that. Doctor Strange, the third Doctor Strange movie, is probably going to be the one that's after Spider-Man and after Doomsday. The one before it, though, is interesting. Because the only one I can think of that it might be is Shang-Chi. But we've heard nothing from Shang-Chi. So it's interesting to think what the first one's going to be. Because it could be Young Avengers, because we've been setting that up. And it also might be WandaVision, or Wanda. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see when they announce it. But I hope this rumor is true for projects in 2026. I am looking forward to heavy Marvel, especially if it's good. If it's not good, I'm probably not going to look forward to it, but we'll see. Last little bit. We have the Vision TV show that's coming, kind of based off the Vision comic book from Tom King. Viv and Vin, the two son and daughter of Vision that he creates for himself. Apparently, they either have been casted or they're looking to cast them. Paul Bettany has talked about it a little bit, and he said there's a really cool idea for this. And if it is based off the Tom King novel, because I just talked about another Tom King graphic novel that another movie is based off of, I would be really into it, because I think Tom King writes some really excellent, cool ideas. There are some controversy stories that I'm kind of just on. One of them might be adapted to Young Justice Season 5, if that ever comes. But yeah, Tom King, great. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going more specific this time. We're going to go episode by episode. Starting with episode 6, because I talked about the first 5 episodes already by myself. Episode 6, directed by Ganja Montero. I'm not familiar by this person. Written by Jason Ruzkowski, who I don't think he's written anything else. And I think that's it for all the things he's written. I like keeping track, because it makes a difference of like who's writing and who's not. Yeah, this is the only episode he's wrote. This guy did a good job. So, Familiar by Thy Side, another song lyric of Witch's Road. This is a really good episode. And I've been hearing people calling this episode a filler episode. You don't know what a filler episode is if you're calling this a filler episode. Of course, this episode doesn't extend the story. It doesn't extend the main story. But filler is filler. Filler is nothing. It does nothing to the story. This isn't filler. This is such a good backstory. And a necessary backstory for Teen. The character of Teen. If you don't want spoilers for Agatha, please stop now. I feel like that is a warning I never give out, but it's also kind of just implied. We're talking details, guys. So, at the end of episode 5, it was revealed that Teen is indeed Billy Maximoff. Billy Maximoff being Scarlet Witch's son. The son that she created in WandaVision in the Hex. He's back for reasons unknown. In this episode, describe those reasons in a very satisfactory way, right? It shows the Hex. It shows people outside the Hex. The Hex breaks. And this couple and their son, this family, right? Husband, wife, son. Teenage son, preteen son. We'll say early teenage son. Driving home. The Hex breaks. They get into a car crash. But it wasn't like... Which is like a very familiar setup. But it wasn't like his parents died. And I thought that was like the unique thing. It wasn't like the parents died and he survived. It was his character died. Billy died. Or William Kaplan died. And Billy, the soul of Billy, is released. Not dead, not gone. Released. And he enters a new body where he becomes Billy Kaplan. And this is where he's celebrating a bar mitzvah. He encounters Lilia, who is a character we will be talking about shortly. Creates a cast. And of course, there's the question of, wait, how does she meet him but not know him, right? Again, a question we will be talking about. Billy gets resurrected. He has to kind of cope with the fact that, like, he doesn't know what's going on, right? He knows something's off. He knows he's not William Kaplan, but he doesn't quite understand who he is. And then we get to 3 years later. He's trying to figure it out. His parents, he can read the mind of the people he loved. There was that whole scene where his parents are just like, what's going on? He isn't acting the same, blah, blah, blah. And this is how he knows that he's not William Kaplan, that he's actually Billy Maximoff. But it's a really interesting story because it's like we get it three years later, right? Billy is a whole new person. A whole new person with parents that accept him for him. Which I think is such a fresh take, and I wish we got more of it. Like, I honestly think this could be a whole TV series. Like, what happens if my son died and somebody else's soul comes in? Do we accept it? Do we not? Like, that could be a story itself. He has a boyfriend, Eddie, who... Eddie sounds familiar to Freddy. In the comic books, his significant other is Freddy. I forget the last name, but his alter ego is Hulkling. Hulkling being not Hulk's son or Hulk's cousin or any relation to Hulk, but Hulkling being, is it Kree or Skrull? Like, he's an alien race who leads, I believe it's Kree. I'm not overly familiar with Hulkling. I have read stories with him in it, but I'm not overly familiar with, like, the Billy Hulkling background. I'm aware of the background, but I'm not overly, like, it's not a story I read. So, he has a boyfriend named Eddie, not Freddy. And there is a huge question, like, is Hulkling going to be in the show? Is he going to be a thing later on? I don't know. But anyway, those two meet up with Rolf Boner. Rolf Boner being the guy who's played by Evan Peters, by the way. Being the guy who was Quicksilver in WandaVision, who ended up being just a normal person named Rolf Boner. And most people complaining like, oh man, we had the setup for Quicksilver, we had Evan Peters, and now he's just a Boner joke, right? He's back. And of course, he's a conspiracy theorist. He brings on this background information that he was controlled by Agatha, that he, in a weird way, like, was involved in just getting his perspective on it, which was just interesting. And it shows, this whole thing shows from Billy's perspective. And he goes to Agatha. He sees Agatha. He sees Agatha in his Wanda's spell. You see his perspective. And eventually, you know, we get to the real story where Agatha comes back up from the Witch's Road. And those two, Agatha kind of gives some words of encouragement. Like, hey, we're here together. We're going to move on. And that was kind of just the episode. And I understand why people think it's filler. But I more or less was just engaged. Like, this is an engaging origin story. This is kind of a fresh origin story that I'm satisfied with. I'm satisfied with the story of Billy's soul finds a fresh body, and Agatha at the end was like, this is what witches do. We survive. We find a way. Of course, Agatha would know. She's been alive for 300 some years. And so, episode 6, I really wanted to talk about it just because I really like the origin story, and I really like the idea of, like, you go into, we realize that Billy, teen, his whole motivation, right? He's not trying to find his mom. He's not trying to find his dad. He's trying to find his twin brother. Because he knows, like, his dad's probably broken somewhere. That's not the case, but probably. His mom, last he heard, died. Which we figured is probably not the case, but, you know, from their perspective, they don't know. And he knows that his soul wound up in a random body. Meaning that Tommy's soul is out there somewhere. And his whole reason to go on the road is to find Tommy. And I like that motivation. And I like that sign of him. Like, it's not for power. It's not to become, to find mom or dad. It's to find his brother. The only other soul that would even understand his story. Or at least, like, sympathize with it. Or empathize with him. Because, like, he's all arguably going on the same journey. And yeah, so episode 6 I thought was just really good. It was a lot different than the other episodes, but I thought it was just a really well done tale. I thought the cinematography was great. I thought the acting was great, and I thought this origin story was just fresh, and his motivation is, it's just a satisfactory episode. And one of the reasons why I'm saying Agatha is one of the best TV shows in MCU, again, not a high bar, but it's definitely, like, it makes the case. It's a fresh origin story. And for those who are calling it filler, you go look up the definition of what filler episode is. Because this isn't filler. This is backstory. Backstory is important. Next episode. Death's Hand in Mine. My God. So I do this thing that my wife hates. And we have this thing where, like, if we are watching a television show together, we cannot watch it without each other. It's like, it's cheating for us. Like, that's how we, like, we don't do it. But the thing is, and I do this often, is if the episode has come out, I will peek at scenes. Like, I won't watch it. Sometimes I'll get caught and I'll watch, like, 5 minutes of it. But I'll watch, like, segments. Because I really just want to have an idea of what it's about. It's more like, more or less for me, like a trailer. My wife hates it, though. For her, it's, you know, like, peeking under a lady's dress. It's like, yo, what the fuck are you doing? Like, that's, you're cheating. You're cheating before cheating. And maybe she's right. Maybe it is. But I just wanted to say that Death's Hand in Mine, and I've been seeing this argument in other places. One of the argument is it's the best Marvel best television of Marvel ever. And I don't know if that's the case, because there's some really good Daredevil episodes, some really good Jessica Jones episodes, there's some really good Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episodes, there's really good Legion episodes. that are definitely up there. But my God, this one is definitely in consideration because it's a 5 for me. And the thing is, when I peeked through this show, scene by scene, it didn't seem like it was a really good episode. I was more or less disappointed when I peeked through. It was like, oh, it's just a trial. And there's not some big moments. And I remember watching like the first 20 or 30 minutes of this episode, and I didn't think much of it. I thought it was really confusing. I was like, okay, this is just a really weird telling of events. Because the whole story of it and the whole premise is Billy and Agatha are going into the castle. They go into a castle. They get dressed up in Disney, which is, you know, her being the Witch of the West, the Wicked Witch of the West. She makes a line about how she's the one who, like, inspired the costume. And Teen being Maleficent. I didn't really care for the setup. I didn't really care for, like, them being like, ah. Because I did, more or less, for me, it's like Disney promotion. And I'm not, to me, I'm just kind of like, eh. Like, cool. Yeah, they look cool. Yeah, they look great. But to me, it's like an uninspired choice. It's the worst part of the episode. But the biggest premise of this episode is that Lilia does not experience time in order. It's out of order. And it's one of those like premises, you're just like, wait, what? It's confusing. And we start seeing the episode from her perspective. And everything is out of order. Like, we jump places to places to places. And the first, like, 20, 30 minutes is confusing. Because, like, they're in the tunnels, but now they're with them. They're doing tarot cards. Teen and Agatha are doing their own thing. I guess I should say Billy and Agatha are doing their own thing. And it's all out of order. And it's really hard to explain this episode for those who haven't watched it. Because, like, as we get to the end, we start to understand what she means as she explains everything out of order. We see things from her perspectives. But towards the end, as we see more and more visions, more memory lapses, it all comes together. And as it comes together, that's when this episode is fucking phenomenal and amazing. And you're just, everything clicks. Because the thing is, this isn't just like you're experiencing this episode out of order. You're experiencing her life experience. And you realize this character's fucking weird the entire show. And you just think it's one of her quirks. You think she's just out of her magic. She's out of touch. But you're like, no, she's just, this just explains her character. And like, I remember just the weird things I didn't think much of throughout this whole show. Where she'll randomly shout things. Or she'll randomly say things, or she'll randomly forget. And you're like, oh, she's just old. But no, it's not the case at all. There's a whole reason and there's a whole purpose to it. And I've never had an experience like this before where a character's just the quirk is explained and just beautifully woven together. And you're just at the end, you're just like, holy shit, damn. It makes sense now. And I love that this whole episode was about tarot cards. Because it's about her, one, explaining her journey. Her whole trial is to set her life straight. What's the purpose of her life? And at the end of it, right, is the tarot card death. And the big reveal that we have left in the show, which I knew about, from a leak, and two, it's pretty obvious who this character was. If you know MCU Marvel Comics, that Aubrey Plaza's character Rio was death. But the way that we, the audience member, figures it out or confirms that she is death, this is a dope way to do it. She's barely even in the show, in this episode. And maybe that is another complaint that, oh, we need more Aubrey Plaza. But I love the fact that, like, she puts it all together. And Agatha already knew. But I love that it's the tarot cards. My wife, really big into like witch culture, went to a mystery party I think I mentioned this last week. Like, she didn't have to dress up. She just went, like, she went as, like, her character was a witch. She just dressed in her normal wear. But she's really big in the tarot cards, too, and oftentimes would do her own tarot readings. And so having a whole tarot, like, reading being the, like, how to reveal death itself and Lily just putting two and two together, it's just, it's such a really well done thing. And I need to watch this episode again. And if I do, I might come back on to go more in depth with it. But I really just love how this put it together. And this episode is the reason why I'm saying, like, here now stating that this is the best MCU show. Because episode 6 was great. The origin story of Bilby was great. It's a 4+. It was a 4+ episode. This was a 5. This was like Daredevil's hallway moment. And like just the ending of it. I loved being a witch. And that character just, she died, but it was such a satisfactory end, such a satisfactory reveal. And I don't, and I feel like so much happened, but so much didn't. It was just a really well-written episode. Like, I'd never seen an episode being purposely confusing and then being put together in such a great fashion where you're just like, holy shit, that makes sense. Like, I've never experienced that before. And maybe I'm giving it a 5 because it's just a fresh take. But we don't get this in Marvel. We don't get fresh, cool writing ideas. We hardly see it. We hardly get fresh. We're tired. We're exhausted. At least I am. But this show has been fresh, like refreshing. And I think it's refreshing because it's not necessarily a superhero show. Like, it is, but it isn't. But the writing style, the different episodes, the fact that it's simple and it's, like, premise. We're going on a road. There's going to be trials. But the execution is amazing. And I don't know if Agatha All Along is going to be the best MCU show at the end of the day. I don't know. But up to episode 7... like, if you had to take it from, like, a percentage point of, like, what is the best season up to, what is it, 89, 88%? Actually, no, that's not the case. It would be, I'm trying to do math in my head of, like, 1 out of 9 or 7 out of 9. I could probably take a calculator. I think it's, like, 78% or something like that. We'll say 77%. Of all the MCU shows, up to 77% of its completion, I don't think there's a show that touches this. Loki definitely does it. Loki ends strong. WandaVision, maybe. That series kind of loses itself towards the end. But WandaVision never had a 5 episode. Never had a 5. A rating of 5. So yeah, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Legion is like the only ones that I'm just like, you know what? They might be better at 77%. But I don't know if they ever had a 5 episode. I don't know. So yeah, Agatha All Along is amazing. If you somehow listen to this episode, this podcast without watching Agatha, do yourself a favor and watch Agatha. It's a great show. Okay, rating wise, I have it as like a 4+. I think it's been a 4-4. And I think last week I was like, all right, this is a 4. This is great. But goddamn, a 5. I don't give out 5s often. Episode 7 was a 5. This is a 4+ show. I don't know if it ends as a 4+. It depends on if it sticks the landing. Like, that's the biggest thing. But man, it's good. Some other questions that I have. I guess I only have one other question, is who's the MVP? And usually I have somebody else talking back and forth of like who the MVP is. I'm trying to think who it is. And I think it's obviously between one, like three characters, but I do think there's other characters that are in contention. One being Lilia now. Like, The last episode was I gave it a 5. She was the main character. It was her perspective. I don't know. I can't say that she's the MVP, but goddamn, like, she's worth consideration. Jennifer Kale, another character that I think is worth consideration. I don't think she makes or breaks the show, but I think, like, she's a fascinating character. She's one of the characters I want to learn more about. The other three, obviously, Teen Joe Locke, Billy Kaplan. I think he's up there. I do think Joe Locke is a pretty good actor. I'm enjoying this character. I think he is one of the three in contention, right? He is arguably the main character. Obviously, Agatha is the main character, but, like, he's arguably the other main character. Agatha, I think, is probably number one in the running for MVP. Catherine Hale is amazing. Like, if we didn't have the talents of Catherine Hale, I don't think this show is as good. Like, I think where the writing kind of falls off a little bit, she makes up with just purely great acting. Like, she hams it up, but she hams it up in a way that it's not disgusting. Like, it's a fun character. She plays it well, and I don't know if there's many actresses who can play this character this well. Because I think a lot of other actresses would make this character either really serious or really ham. But Catherine Hale is such a good balance that she's probably my number one in the running. But I don't know if she's not necessarily running away with it. One in part, I don't know if Agatha is the main. I don't know if she is necessarily the main character. I don't know if she's the one who makes the show. I did say that her acting makes the show, but I don't know, like, at the end of the day, if her character is, like, the point. I don't know if her character is the focus. The other one in contention is obviously Aubrey Plaza. Because, man, when she's on the screen, like, her character has interaction, she steals the show. She steals it from Catherine Hale. She steals it from Joe Fox. She's such a great actress. She plays weird really well. And God, like, now that it is confirmed that she is Lady Death, it's fun. So it's between the three. I think it really depends how this show ends. I think the other question is, who's the villain? I don't think we have an answer. Obviously, the Salem Seven is, like, the main antagonist group. But they're kind of just faceless. And I know they're not faceless because they're Agatha's old coven. But they're kind of faceless. They're kind of just a force. And I'm okay with it. I don't think the show needs them to be more. At least at this point, they did not need to be more. But the question is, who's the villain? Is Agatha the villain? Agatha all along. But that means Billy Maximoff would be the protagonist, right? Is Billy the villain? Does he take a dark turn? And Agatha's the hero? Or is it Death? I mean, I guess she's the obvious choice. She is Death. Agatha and Billy are trying to potentially escape Death. Does this show need a villain? Does this need a final antagonist? I don't know. I'm curious how this ends. I mean, I'm really excited for next week, because that's what we're talking about. I owe a Venom episode. I owe One Piece. But, man, Agatha's just great. So, yeah. I am excited for the end of the show. I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't. I assume we're getting Tommy. There is that reveal that Jack Schaefer is the one who did who made the show, doesn't know what happened to Wanda. She doesn't have those answers. So I don't expect Wanda to make an appearance. I don't expect this being the show that, like, Wanda's back. I don't think that's what the show is. But I do think that we're going to get some answers in the fact that what's going to happen with Lady Death? What's going to happen with Agatha? And where is Billy going? Also, we still haven't had Mephisto. And I don't know if he's coming, but at some point, we need him to come, right? He's too big. We keep mentioning him. We keep toying him. We keep talking about things in the comics that happens because of him. Is Mephisto the villain at the end? I don't know. I don't want to assume that he's coming, because I feel like every time we assume he's coming, he's not going to come. But that's also just a question. Do we get Mephisto? Do we figure out at the Witch's End, like, who runs it? I feel like it's probably Mephisto. I don't know what else it would be. And I think that'd be satisfactory if it was. I just don't want to get my hopes up, because it's been 3 years. Is it Mephisto? But also, it's kind of a fun joke. All right. Take a quick break. We'll talk a little bit of Penguin. That'll be it. Quick break. Now we're back to talk the Penguin. And I had a kind of a second thought where I kind of just wish in the moment when we were talking about Penguin that I wished that I kind of just finished that thought, because I don't really have much more to say about the episode Homecoming. And obviously this episode, this podcast, if you're listening to it, Episode 6 has already come out. Episode 6. But my biggest... I think I'm enjoying this show. I think it's a pretty good show. I think it's a 4-4. It's great. Like, we're watching great television. I think it's not perfect. There is flaws. I think you can argue that it's a 3+ if you wanted to. But I think it's around that area. It's like it's good to great. I think it leans more great than it does good. But my concern about the last episode, Homecoming, or I guess 2 episodes from now, my biggest concern is there's a lot of things happening. There's a whole gang war happening right now in this show. Oz essentially has his own gang. He's pitting the Moronis and the Falconis against each other, and has kind of found his own operation. And that's kind of like where we ended the show. He's going to start his own operation with Victor and Sophia and Moroni. They combine their families to take on Oz. And that was kind of the end of it. But in order to get there, right, there was a lot of killing going on. Sophia murders his own family. Takes over, pretty much wipes out her entire family. And it's a cool scene. Oz tries to take out Moroni and tries to take out and almost succeeds in taking out Moroni. But there's just like this lingering question of the spinoff. And I feel like this lingering question is going to ruin the idea of spinoff shows for Batman. And I think this idea ruins a lot of other TV shows that tries to do this concept. And me and Brandon talked about it a little bit, because his whole concern is like, how do you tell a Batman story without Batman? And I think that this episode, Homecoming, has that same question. How do you tell a story in a world of Batman without Batman? And I get the whole premise is that, like, well, Batman, he's doing other things. Gotham's a big city. He's working on other things. He's not focusing on it. And that makes sense to a degree. And you don't always need to show Batman. But I think when you watch the movie, the whole idea of the first opening scene is that Batman's more of a myth and a legend. That people think he's going to show up, and he doesn't always show up, because obviously he can only be in one place at one time. And there's many, many crime happening. But his presence, his legend, makes criminals question things. It's the same concept of the Dark Knight. But this show never shows Batman. It doesn't talk about Batman. Penguin's, throughout his whole operation, doesn't worry about Batman. And in its own, this show on its own, it works, right? You don't need to worry about Batman. But if you're going to watch the Batman, then watch the Penguin, it doesn't work. Oz can't manipulate a gang war with this much death, and the Batman never shows up. You can't do it. Like, it breaks the illusion. Right? And the thing is, like, this show doesn't need to show Batman. It just needs to talk about Batman. Right? Like, hey, maybe we shouldn't meet up. Or, hey, maybe we should be more secretive. We don't want the Batman to show up. Right? Or just the idea that, like, maybe we show it off screen. Like a shadow. And we just hear Robert Pattinson's Batman voice. Or we get more bring up of like other things that are happening that Batman's all focusing on. Like, it just answers the question, where's Batman during all of this? And I think if you're not going to answer the question, then why is this show even a part of that universe? Because the question itself, where's Batman, kind of ruins the reality of the show. Where is Batman? Right? If this is a world where Batman has an active presence and you're going to murder and like a shit ton of people in an episode where Batman is actively involved in this world and you don't bring up the topic of Batman in the show, then it's hard to believe it. And it distracts from the actual topic at hand. And I know that, like, moviegoers, movie writers, like, they don't want to answer the question. They're like, well, the obvious answer is, well, we can't have the Batman show up. Like, we can't afford it. It's an off-screen thing. And that's fine. It's understandable. But to not mention the Batman at all ruins the show, because it ruins the question. It becomes unbelievable. And I wish that they would at least address the topic, address the issue in the show to talk about it. Like, I don't need to see the Batman showing up, but he is an active member of the show. So when the Batman comes out part two, like, it's hard to believe that these are the same thing from the same universe if they're not having that interaction. The Penguin needs to be its own thing. I completely 100% agree with it. The Batman shouldn't be a major thing. I agree. Because then at that point, people are just waiting for the Batman to show up. But you do need to address the character. And that character doesn't need to be the character. The character just needs to be the legend, the myth, right? The Batman already set up a perfect alibi for this show, for Batman. It sets it up. He's busy. He's doing a lot of things. He can't be everywhere at once. But you need the character that is the myth. And yes, that is a character in itself. The myth of Batman, the fear of what the Batman brings, should be an active presence on this show. And I, same with like Riddler and stuff like that. Like, this, it just, I'm enjoying the show, but I wish there would be more interactivity. I wish there was more connective tissues to put the universes together, so it's not a question, because it's distracting. And this is where I think Agatha does a really good job of it. And for the most part, it's its own thing. It doesn't need to be a part of the MCU. But the fact that it is, and it like ties up, it like it does the connective tissues that is needed. Like Scarlet Witch, like they tease that. Like, it's enough. It's enough to get by. It's enough to like be immersed in that world, in that TV show, without having that lingering question of like, why aren't they not addressing the Scarlet Witch? They're like, no, they're addressing it. Like, the writer has no idea if Wanda's dead or alive, but they're still addressing the idea, the topic. the Batman needs to do the same. It needs to address it. I don't understand why we do this in Hollywood where we don't, where we have these Batman shows or these superhero shows, but they never address the issue where the Batman is. And the WB, like Warner Brothers or whoever owns DC, like, I don't know why it's a fucking thing. And I'm saying the curse word because it's frustrating. Like Gotham has this. It's like, oh, we're going to tell Batman's story without Batman. Or with Joker, we're going to tell a Joker story without Batman. Venom just bombed this weekend. We're going to tell a story without Spider-Man. Like, it's fine. But this shouldn't be an active trend. Like, it's fine if we have a show, like one show about it here or there. Like, that's a cool, fresh twist initially. But it's not, it's more or less like you're trying to, I don't know. It's like if you're making a chicken meal without the chicken. Yeah, the veggies taste great. Yeah, the mashed potato is great. Yeah, the gravy is great. But dude, give me the chicken. Like, the chicken makes it. The chicken's Batman in this scenario. Like, Smallville's another one. Yeah, it's a great, everything was great about it. But the fact that, like, you went, 10 seasons and didn't show Superman until the very last scene? Like, Superman, like, after a while, it just becomes distracting from the show itself. And I feel like that's where we're at with the Penguin. Yeah, the Penguin is the main character. Yeah, he's the story. He's the focus. But god damn it, we need like some addressing of the issue that is Batman. Where is he? What is he doing? Why isn't he showing up to the slaughter? And maybe this show does address it. And maybe it like, the messages that they're giving us is just an attempt to deceive us, and the Batman does show up and like that issue gets addressed. Maybe that happens, but, and maybe I'll just delete this entire rant that I'm doing, this 10-12 minute rant, and I'll delete it and you guys won't listen to it. But I don't think that's the case. I think we're getting a whole Penguin mini show without the Batman, and it's frustrating as a fan. He doesn't need to be there, but it does need to be addressed. Either way, I'm enjoying the Penguin, but I'm really just hoping that this issue doesn't ruin the show, but I feel like it might for me. Regardless, it's at least a 4-4 area. It's still pretty good. I'm hoping I can get somebody else to watch it so we can talk about it like in full. But we will see. All right. That's it for this week. Agatha. We talked Agatha. We talked Penguin. I'm probably talking Agatha next week. That's probably going to be the episode. Soon we will be talking One Piece with Mr. Brandon. And honestly, in a month or two, I might be talking One Piece with Ro as well. Who knows? We'll see. Thank you, guys. This is Jake Sherbing, your host. And this is Don't Evolve Me. We out.